position number 22623, reel 7.
Sid Leach, reel 7.
A German who we found later on and obviously was their officer, it appeared from about behind one of the boulders and was making a getaway. The Sergeant Jackson has seen him. Now, I must break the story now by saying that on the advance up from Capua, the brigade had run across a huge Italian arms and ammunition dump, and there was an enormous amount of Berettas. One of the things that they found was a whole lot of Berettas, this Italian, like Tommy guns, and the idea was, we'd all thought that when we fall, in planning what we were going to do to take, was to arm as many as we could with Berettas, which were automatic. And we had quite a few of Berettas with, I had a Beretta, for one thing, and had discarded the rifle, and had gone up the mountain, and most of all the section commanders had got them. And Sam Jackson, of course, had one. And he, at that time, racing across Sienin of his Beretta, and in the climatic conditions, nothing happened as he pressed the trigger. And nothing happened from the others who'd got the climate and the conditions. For some reason or other, nothing came out as he pulled the trigger, which, of course... But having seen this, he pursued, drew his matchet, which we all had, and like an Indian, brandishing it, darted over this rocky mount after this boat. And I sure I yelled at him to come back, because the officer obviously would have turned around and obviously had a revolver, and of course would have shot him. But we had the 2-inch mortar, which is a platoon weapon, with us, and I said to the young fusilier, give him the mortar. And it's one of the few times, and we had known and have learned that it could be fired from the hip instead of, as it was, held on the ground and bomb popped on in it. And I always remember this going across and telling him to put a bomb in, and I fired this thing from the hip, and of course I had a terrific bruises then for a long, long time after, but which deterred this officer just disappeared amongst all the rocks and the boulders and that sort of thing on the side.
It deterred who?
Yeah. But the result was later on, here's another thing, this Sergeant Jackson, when the battle was written up afterwards, this particular episode was mentioned, and the Sergeant Jackson was given an American award, and he was brought to this country by the American, we were the American Fifth Army a part of, and he had a month's leave in which he was wined, dined and everything by the Yanks, and eventually returned to us. But he had an American war for it. One of the things that happened. Anyway, that was basically, at that particular stage, then our particular phase in the battle. We sent these prisoners back, and of course, down the Mac and down and out of the way. They didn't want any people. They were absolutely no good to us up there. And the obvious choice to send back down was this corporal and, of course, one or two others, which we did. Obviously, when he got right down to the bottom of the mountain and later on, had reported that I had threatened to shoot him. Eventually, about 10 days later, when we were back all off the mountain, I was sent up to brigade and called for and go up to brigade. And I was given a hell of a rollicking by Brigadier Firth for not shooting the men. I'd given an order and threatened to shoot the men under those circumstances, I should have carried it out. But I got old. Yes, I remember, and I thought, well, you know, it really did. He says, no, no, if you threaten to shoot a man for this particular sort of his behaviour, you shoot him under those circumstances.
What kind of behaviour had you threatened him for?
Well, he hadn't threatened, he'd just disobeyed an order, hadn't he?
Which order?
My order.
To do what?
To bring his section out to take command and to take part in a battle, which obviously his nerve had gone. But, and that was just an episode of that. Well, we were in that area, but you can go on and on and on, but I won't go on and on and on. Now, while we were there, in this terrible winter conditions and this terrible stonking, because of course we were on an area then now on the frontage, which of course the Germans could visit and see us from other mountains in the air and across. The caves that the Germans had sort of blown out of the rocks to give them a bit of protection now, of course, were facing them. So we, of course, could do hardly any movement. We did take over one of them into this platoon, and we put them in there. And we had one particular fellow, he'd gone what we then called Bomb Happy, and basically he lost his nerves and that sort of thing. But to have got him down the mountain and that sort of thing would have taken perhaps two or three people to get him down. It took, and if you read the accounts after, it does say that to get one wounded person down the track, it would probably take about seven chaps, one slip. And we lost a lot of men by such a bare slipping, and the whole lot going down off the track, which was eventually opened. But the Germans, of course, had it registered by their artillery and continuously fired at this spot. So eventually this track that came up from this sheer side got narrower and narrower and narrower. But anyway, whilst we were up there, we were never counter-attacked, but we were considerably stonked, basically, continuously, by Neverworthers. And there are these horrible things, which, as they wind them up and wind them up and wind them up, they screech and they screech and they screech in the most terrible noise. And then they've got about six, eventually, they had some eight-barreled. And when they it's eventually fired, if you're in this area, you get to know that if the first one's full and you're in an area, where's the other five and that sort of thing going to fall? Neverworthers, they were called. We call them moaning minis. They were terrible for the nerves. And that's what they do. With all the continuous rain and the cold in the area, and of course, we had the platoon, the rest of the company were then sort of over the top of us, because we'd gone round and our little cave thing, as you know, was in under the side. You couldn't move out really or make much movement during daylight, even to carry out the normal activities of relieving yourself. And well, there you are. You had to behave most primitively. If you got out of the cave, and one of the chaps did one day and took his jacket off, and I saw him, and he finished put his jacket on, and it was shredded with bullet holes. It was terrible. They never did get any water up to us the whole 5 days. So what we had, we used to bail out of the shell holes and that sort of water, and we had, of course, our capsules and that sort of thing, and we made our own sort of tea like that. At night time, you had to send back chaps way back in darkness, way back to collect rations for them. And of course, rations came up in boxes for about 14 men, and they were doled out then, sort of thing. And another thing, unknown and not very well known at all, was Sykes Wright, who wrote our particular battalion account of the battle, was considerably annoyed when he came up at night time to once got through to us to visit us. When we opened these boxes and got them back, we found that all the cigarettes had been taken out of them, and this went on not just the one night, the whole time, all the boxes that came up and were eventually brought forward to dole out and have as our rations. There's no cigarettes in it, and a considerable amount of the chocolate had been taken out. And chocolate was the most important thing, vital thing up in the mountains. And we later on found out that at that particular time, and we were not, the Liverpool Dockers, I'm afraid, lived for a long, long time in our memory. We found out later, and the report shows, that they were on strike. And that when they had loaded the ships and that, they'd vandalised this, and that's all the cigarettes and the boxes had been repacked. We had no cigarettes or no when it came there. And to troops in action in those times, I mean, it was a vital thing. It was a vital thing. Many, many, many blokes, this particular chap that we had up there, Bomb Happy, had never smoked, but he smoked after I dealt with him. I pushed him into the back of the cave and forced a cigarette in his mouth and that sort of thing. Because this went so often. If you found and sent back all these particular, you had to find something to do with them. Because you were losing men all the time. We were never, ever, hardly ever up to strength. So every fellow that you lost and that sort of thing meant to say that it was far more for the few that were left to do. And of course, the issue, I mean, the strain was, it really was awful. However, and in his report, he reported the fact to the authorities that what had happened with those local dockers, there was something that happened. We were up there under those same conditions 6 nights and days. We never did find this particular officer until a day before we were able to move. A platoon from a company, I presume, had captured this bloke, whether he'd had rations or not, but he was in quite a state, and that was a fellow that literally he must have been up there, and of course, in possibly the contact, we don't know, but they all Germans registered on us, you know, quite continuously, so we wondered whether he'd been able to send messages, you know, and give references. We don't know.
You mean this was the German officer?
Yes,
pursued?
Yes. Hmm. We were relieved eventually. We were relieved eventually by the London Irish 168 Brigade. And I shall never forget the night that they came up, made a hell of a lot of noise and that sort of thing. And they thought, oh my God, they're going to stonk us before we can get back out of it. But we never had any fresh water. We used water bailed out of the shell holes and brewed up. And of course, we had no blankets. We'd had to use the scurvy things that the Jerrys had left behind. At that particular time, it was a fair we began to find that in the bottom of the cave, of course, the water had come down, and we began to find that trench feet. Our toes were beginning to turn blue and that sort of thing. Our socks and things, our spares and that sort of thing were brought up. And conditions, they really were frightening. They were terrible. On the night in which I say we were relieved, the London Irish relieved us. from 168 Brigade, and we heard them coming up and creating quite a lot. There was enough noise, you couldn't help making noise as you walked in darkness, as stones moved and rolled. And of course, while we were up there, you could never dig in. You had to pile stones in front of you for those that couldn't get in the yard to make what we called sangers, which you hope would stop the shrapnel. But, oh, it was terrible. Rain, and more rain and cold. And, of course, our method then, of course, was to get back and then go back down this track. And I always remember that, of course, this track was the sole thing that was bringing up rations and stuff and ammunition and of course, taking, which the rest of the battalion were using and other troops up, because there was Gunner OP up there as well with us eventually. Had to use this track to get all the way back down to the bottom. And where it had been, as I said before, continuously shelled, it got very, very narrow. And the sheer drops down the side. And I always remember us rushing and tearing and the fellas rushing to tear to get that before something else come the other way up. And when we got near to this particular area, and of course nothing could pass by except one person, or in that case one mule coming up, because it got so narrow in this part. An Italian mule was coming up with bringing stuff up. And, well, it just happens in that case. I always remember my chaps just getting there a bit before and pushing him a whole lot down over so the chaps could come by, and that's how it happened. But in those sort of things, it did happen. And anyway, we eventually got down to the bottom of the mountain, where the RSM and the rest of the battalion and that were waiting. And I always remember getting down to the bottom of the mountain, and as bad as our feet was in there, Sergeant Middledetch and myself and a few of the others doing the knees up Mother Brown. A stupid thing, but we did. Much to the horrification of the RSM, who thought we were bloody mad, of course. However, from there we went into rest, and as I say, I was called, and we had no proper sleep then for, at least 8 nights. And there we were taken up, back up to this village of Orchi, I think it was. And there we were put into billets, where they were pushed into, we arrived in all the early hours of the morning. And, they were just, the object of them was to just open the door of a house and say, right, you've got, sleep in here with the families, whatever, for a month. From there, of course, I eventually, 2 days later, had to appear before the Brigadier Firth, and that's what he told me. From then, of course, after a while in that area, 56th Division was moved over to the coast area, and 46th Division came in that area. And eventually, the French forces came over and were taking part in the battles for the Fifth Army. And they erected a monument, which is still there. Got a picture, not down there, of it, in which they were so amazed that we'd taken the mountain and the conditions were that they erected a bit of a monument. Still there at the bottom of the Mount Camino. But basically, that was our battle for Camino. The monastery was taken eventually by 169 Brigade, who'd come up the other way. That was Camino, and it was from that battle, that was the first battle of the winter, the Gustave Line, which troops then knew, God, it's going to be a terrible time up through mountain. And we actually, and that's how we sort of learnt what it's going to be like through the winters. That was the first mountain battle, in the big mountain battle, in Italy that had occurred, and of course it went on and on and on. But it was essential before you could get up the Liri Valley. There was still more to clear to get to Cassino, because it's overlooked. From there, well, you had a few, you had days rest, and you were in the line, and eventually it moved on and on and on. You moved on and on and on. Grigliana came, and was the next big river to cross. And of course, that meant, of course, patrolling and finding out about it. And we moved to an area in which, of course, our task was to patrol at night times. And over the Grigliana Plains, which has to be done to find out where are suitable places to cross rivers and that sort of thing. And we did that for several times. At that particular stage, I turned completely yellow. Jaundice, completely yellow. And this was coming up to Christmas Day, and although, of course, I'd been up forward, and we were patrolling finding out and reporting back on the situation, we had found an air patroller. There was a goat track right under the River Grigliano. A goat track where they got from one side to the river. And of course, we never went through it, but the Germans used to come through it sometimes. And when we'd meet to shake hands on that stuff, but in the distance, they would never fire as they came out, because they'd have to get back. They were patrolling back. You would see them in the light of the moon going out the sides and coming out that way and patrolling into the open ground. They never fired on us, and we never fired on them.
For what reason?
For one reason, of course, that they wanted to get back the other side and we wanted to get back the other side. And that's how it went. We were then brought back away from this area. To a bit of a rest area towards the gun lines. And, I'd got severe jaundice at the time and had to report sick. And they said I'd got jaundice. And which I then, of course, found myself being picked up by an ambulance. French women were driving that ambulances in that particular area at the time, and eventually moved back from one aid post to another, and eventually arrived back, because we were this side and across the mountain, eventually arrived back in Naples on Christmas Eve. This would be 1944, and eventually found myself in 92nd British General Hospital in Naples, all rather ragged clothes and tired and looking quite a sight, and amongst with all other things. And I always remember I was arriving back there in the afternoon and being placed in this ward, and all around I was signs of Christmas time, the nurses, and that had made it a 92nd British General Hospital overlooked Vesuvius, and it was a huge place. There was in this particular area, there was an American hospital, an Italian hospital, and a British hospital. It was just outside of Naples, and I always remember being placed in this bed, a doctor coming on. He had sort of, and on those were other troops around, and on the lockers was bottles of beer and all kinds of goodies, apples and oranges and things. I always remember him coming up and saying, "Oh," he said, "well, we're not going to do anything about you today." He says, "You can have any of this, you know, if you like, yourself. He says, but don't blame me after. I felt anything like this.
You had no appetite for it?
Well, on this journey across to get to Naples for 3 or 4 days, you'd been tented from the nurses, and you'd been on, and that's all I had. All they got was boiled rice, and that was one of their own, boiled rice and jellies. That was the diet that you got on, and it continued in the hospital for a while too. But the following morning, which he said they would think about the treatment starting, he came round, and well, there you are. I was muddied up, my clothes and that were muddied up, and we had no bath units out there at that time, and they certainly, you tried to keep yourself as clean and as tidy as you could. And anyway, the next morning, the following morning, a nurse came in, and well, I called her a nurse too. Came in with the doctor, and she went round the beds, and I'm laying there in the bed, and eventually she came to my bed, and I laid there, and the doctor came up, and all of a sudden this voice came out, "Sergeant, lay to attention when the doctor comes round to inspect you." I said, "Nurse, where I come from, I've got no bloody time for this." "How dare you," she says, "I'm a sister." Yeah, there weren't nurses out there, because they were all sisters. To give them a rank, they all had a rank as protection rank. And I always remember looking at this page, he never said a word. He's horrified at the time. That, you know, it seems so comical to me, and so they'll be told to lay to attention. Well, dear, oh dear, oh dear. Yeah, but of course I'd made a terrible mistake, was calling her a nurse, and she never forgot that. Later on, after a few days, and that you sort of began to get you better and that sort of thing, they used to allow them on a pass down into Naples, and of course Naples was particularly taken over by the Yanks, and they had lots of shows and things, and there was a tram left from this little area where the hospital was, and to take you into town, but it didn't run very often, but you had to have a pass, and you had hospital blues. You that's all you wore, and even when you went down, the hospital blues in those days. And she always had her home back after that. She'd late until the last minute, until she came and gave me the pass. By the time you got...
Gave you the what?
The pass to go down into the town. And very often the tram, you'll just see it vanishing. Yeah. Well, whilst she was there, in that day, Templar, I didn't know at the time, but Templar had come in too, for our actions on Mount Camino. Myself as a platoon commander and my son had been recommended for an award for our part in the battle. And Templar was very, very hot on that. He was very, very, really was. He had to have it. You weren't given a medal or nothing out there, but at least you should have the little coloured ribbon. And he came, apparently he came to the 92nd British General and that sort of thing to, he came into the ward where I was, and I was unaware of that, and he came up. And of course, as I've turned on previously, we'd always somehow been with Templars in this country before we went out. Templar knew us and knew right from the start. And of course, he'd flown in to Salerno when our own divisional commander it got a bit too much for him. It was Templar that flew in and took over command of 56 did. So I was again in under Templar's command. And I always remember him coming up and